You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, the U.S. spent trillions of dollars fighting wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Almost half of that went to contractors, and one-third of all the Pentagon's contracts went to just five suppliers. Answering a listener question, 1A takes a look at where the money went. That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now, who doesn't want to juice up their brain power? Tuning our minds to run at a higher level sounds like a good idea, and there are lots of people who'd be happy to take our money in exchange for supplements, trainings, games, and apps they say will boost our brains. But do they work? Results are sketchy at best, but there are some proven brain boosters, and a lot of them involve doing things with other people. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you spent a lot of time thinking about how to boost your thinking and problem-solving skills? Do you do some kind of brain training app or seek out foods or supplements that might help with that? Do you do things with other people that seems to help stimulate your brain? Taking a class, a book group, playing games. I like playing games. You can join at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you could post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Emily Willingham is a science writer with work appearing in publications including the New York Times, Scientific American, and Forbes. Her new book is called The Tailored Brain, From Ketamine to Keto to Companionship, A User's Guide to Feeling Better and Thinking Smarter. Emily, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You write that people have used a lot of metaphors for the brain over the years, most recently like a machine or a computer. You have an interesting one, though. Our brain is kind of like a planet. Can you talk about why you like that metaphor?
I like that metaphor preferentially over talking about the brain being something that's wired, because wiring sounds so not organic. And I don't mean that in terms of like food that you eat that's organic, but I mean in terms of a living thing, like a penguin or a tree. And it's not just about the neurons that are in it that form that wiring, but, you know, 50% of the other cells in our brains are not those kinds of cells. And all these things are interacting like almost like an ecosystem or a larger version of an ecosystem, which is a planet. And I think that metaphor captures that better.
And another part of that is there's one planet and there's another planet and there's lots of planets, and their gravity can affect the other orbits. One planet can affect another. And that's a key to a lot of the thinking behind what does work to make our brains better. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, and exploring some of the things that are, you know, the claims that are made about making our brains better, they seem to focus so much on individual brains, like what can you do for your brain, right? And what I've learned through digging through a lot of the research is that we might be better off looking at what happens with the other brains around us as we work to improve ourselves, because we almost, none of us lives alone and, you know, without contact with other people.
And our brains evolved in the same way, right? We're a very social animal. That's maybe why our brains are what they are. When you put it that way, I hadn't thought of it this way. It almost seems weird to not think about the social side of our brains if we want to be smarter, whatever that means.
Right. That's kind of the conclusion I came to as well, because we have a lot in common with other social species, both in terms of, you know, how we interact and construct our social interactions. And then also just in the way our brains operate. There are a lot of, you know, mammalian social species anyway. And, you know, it's interesting because all these promises are about, you know, improving your smarts, as it were. But so few things focus on, well, how do you get along with each other better, or interact with each other better, or understand each other better?
Talking to Emily Willingham about her new book, The Tailored Brain, From Ketamine to Keto to Companionship, A User's Guide to Feeling Better and Thinking Smarter. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions about our brains and how to better them. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Emily, our brains are pretty complicated. One tricky thing, it turns out, if we want to make our brains better or smarter or whatever, it's really hard to measure success, right?
Right. I mean, it depends on what you're trying to measure. But if you're talking about something like your intelligence, you know, the measures for those have a lot of things that complicate them or confound them. And they're not by any means pure measures of what our capacities are. And so that's hard to capture. It carries a lot of the biases of, you know, who's doing the testing and making the tests.
Now, let's look at different possible approaches to the bettering of the brain. As I mentioned, there are a lot of places we could spend our money for supplements or brain training apps. Should I be whipping out my credit card and going online right now to sign up for these things?
Well, so I have good news for you. No, you don't need to do that. What I found was, I was surprised by it because I came to a lot of this pretty agnostically. And what I found is that we really don't, most of the things that seem to have the biggest effects don't cost us money. You move around, you know, physical activity, you engage with other people. And yes, I was most surprised, I think, by the mindfulness effects and how that does seem to improve a lot of the things that we maybe should be focused on improving.
Let's talk about that doing things with other people. One of the things that does stand out as showing brain improvement, as you write about in the book, is doing some kind of learning or creative activity in a context with other people. Sounds kind of like school, say. What kind of things do we know work when we get together and boost our brains, plural?
It's interesting because it kind of helps us organize around who we are relative to other people. We can draw the boundary of ourselves versus someone else, and we can also put ourselves in their shoes and share experiences with them and come to understand those experiences as well, which expands our minds. And when we learn things about other people, we show curiosity about other people, we're constantly incorporating that information into our own worldview and weaving that in and even using that to sort of make predictions and solve problems. It's all just an ongoing learning process when we interact with other people that way.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Ross is with us from Middleton. Ross, hi.
Hey, Rob. So I retired a year and a half ago or so and looked at a guitar a few times when I was younger and then finally thought, well, why don't I learn an instrument, which is something, no real musical background. So that's been a real challenge, learning to read music, learning to put my fingers wherever they're supposed to go. And kind of related to what you guys were saying was, it's, you know, whether or not my brain is getting bigger or smaller, I don't know. But I find that there's no way in heck that I would play in front of people that to play music in front of them. But what I do enjoy is practicing with other people that are also learning.
Yeah. What does that feel like, Ross? What, how does it feel playing alone at home, say, versus in a group, interacting with other people as you're learning?
Right. So when you're on your own, you can kind of go in whatever direction you want to go. I mean, I do need some structure because I don't have the skill set to just sort of teach myself. So there's some tools out there that can kind of help you to learn it. So I like the idea of sort of going with something, saying I'm not going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then when I'm with there's some Zoom classes because we're in this COVIDian age, and it's sort of nice just to be able to just sort of see different people at different stages, more or less beginning. And it just makes it easier to sort of play in front of other people.
Ross, thank you so much for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Emily, Ross, kind of a poster child for a lot of what you're saying.
Yeah, I like to hear that story. That was a great story. There is something to be said to having other people at the table as you learn and you see where they need help and you can help them or they can help you. And this exchange of ideas is another reason, I think, to kind of have more people at your brain table with you and to have those exchanges, get that satisfaction.
Ross, thanks again for calling in at 800-642-1234. That reminds me about you've got a chapter on creativity and boosting our creativity, our creative minds in particular. What kind of things seem to work well for that?
You know, it's interesting, again, it's other people, it turns out. I mean, it's not just in the brainstorming sense, although that can help. But as I've gotten older, especially, this has become more obvious to me. But when you do include other people, when you're trying to think of things or solve a problem or come up with ways to do it, they can come up with things that you're never anywhere near. And I just think that that's so useful. And it does help with creativity to have other people contributing.
And one supplement that does seem to help is eating fruits and veggies.
I had to put that in there for the sake of, you know, parents everywhere, but it's just a very sort of, you know, low level of evidence that's suggested in a couple of studies that that yes, that consumption was associated with, it doesn't mean it's causal, but associated with sort of better creativity scores.
So maybe creative people like their fruits and veggies. It could go
either way. Yeah, exactly. There's some potential conflation there.
We're talking to science writer Emily Willingham about her new book, The Tailored Brain, From Ketamine to Keto to Companionship, A User's Guide to Feeling Better and Thinking Smarter. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there something that you find makes you feel better and think more clearly, think smarter? Have you already been doing some of the things we've been talking about with our guest? Is there a social activity that you do, maybe while you're learning something along the way that you don't know if it makes you feel smarter? Maybe you do, but it makes you feel better as you're doing it. And what questions do you have for our guest about some of the brain science she's been researching? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with science writer Emily Willingham about her new book, The Tailored Brain. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your thoughts on how to build a better brain. Are there little things you do to try to keep your brain working well, to feel smarter or think more clearly? Do you do creative things with other people? Tell us about it. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Roger is with us in Grantsburg. Roger, hi.
How are you doing? Love your show. Great, great topic today.
Thanks.
I was curious if she had any sections in her book about linking your subconscious with your conscious and your dreams and making, you know, heads or tails, I guess heads or tails out of your dreams. And if you can link that into your conscious and use it.
Roger, thanks for the call. I talked to a dream researcher not that long ago who said dreams are still pretty mysterious. Emily, any thoughts on doing the things Roger is hoping to do? He wants to link our subconscious with our conscious and learn from our dreams.
I didn't directly address that in the book, but I did look at some of what it might mean if you remember your dreams. And there's there may be some distinction in brain connectivity between people who wake up and remember enormous detail about their dreams and people who don't. So there's certainly something going on there, and it might be related to memory and what we can retain in memory.
Roger, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Terry on Facebook writes, I'm not familiar with mindfulness. Can you address what it is? Talk a little more about it. You'd mentioned a mindfulness, Emily, as one of these tools to help develop our brains.
Yeah, mindfulness is actually kind of a bucket term that people use. It can be defined in a lot of ways, but essentially it's where you draw yourself, I'm going to define it my way. Mm-hmm. You draw yourself into the moment. You observe what's going on around you right now without like the sort of ruminatory spiraling that you can get into. And you just observe without judgment and sort of focus on what's happening in the moment. I think one of a sort of easily accessible activity that's related to it is a breathing activity where you just do deep breathing and exhalations for, you know, a minute or two and just really focus on doing that to just kind of recenter yourself and get yourself out of your own brain.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Stephanie is with us in New Berlin. Stephanie, hi.
Hi. This was a cool topic. It kind of made me think of like when I've been traveling to different countries, I see a lot of people like going out and learning how to play chess together. So sometimes we're at parks, they're like, we'll go to like different locations, you know, so people just like hanging out, socializing, bringing a chessboard and just like hanging out and be able to do that. So I like to do that actually a lot, like with a friend or a partner or something, just go out to like a cool cafe or like a brewery outside. I don't see that as much around here, but it's really fun, and I encourage other people to try it too.
Stephanie, that's great. I have done that. It's something I hope to do in the future, hopefully at a more post-COVIDian age, as one of our callers said earlier. Do you get funny looks, or when people see you doing it, do they say, yeah, I want to do that too?
actually, yeah, people are like really curious and like, oh, that's really cool. I never thought of that before, you know? So it's just like, why not? Like, you can sit at home and do it, or you can go outside and like have fun, enjoy the fresh air, or like sit at a park and have a picnic and play some chess, you know? So there are a lot of portable chess boards that are like magnetic. So it makes it much easier to do something like that. But there's a lot of good ones where you can just take them with you and like fold them up when you're done. So I think it's a fun idea.
Stephanie, thank you so much for sharing that. And Emily, I think we might think, oh, if I play on a chess app against a robot, that's going to boost my brain. Stephanie's way is going to be way better from what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because they've looked at chess very closely, including somebody who's a chess master. He loves chess, but you know, if you play chess just on your own, you get better at playing chess, but it doesn't necessarily transfer and make you, you know, like Bradley Cooper in the movie Limitless. But what your caller just described, Stephanie, I believe, it's just, you know, a fabulous way to spend your time. You're outside, you're getting that kind of boost from being in nature, you're getting a boost from doing this with other people. Games are fun. If you love chess, that's fun. All of these things are very positive activities that can kind of clear your brain of some of its burden and let you just have a good time.
Stephanie, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Emily Willingham, author of the new book, The Tailored Brain, From Ketamine to Keto to Companionship, A User's Guide to Feeling Better and Thinking Smarter. A couple other things I wanted to get into, Emily. You talk about this idea of cognitive overload. And if we could figure out how to deal with that, it's, you know, it may not make us permanently smarter, but it's going to help us think more clearly in the moment. What is cognitive overload? How do we fight it?
It's when you've got too many things going on in your brain so that you lose the ability to make sort of cool-headed decisions, for example. I think of myself as like, you know, being in the kitchen, there's a toddler hanging onto your leg, the pot's boiling over, something just caught on fire, your phone rings, and someone rings the doorbell. That's kind of a lot. That's cognitive overload. And in that situation, if somebody came up to me and said, Emily, I'm going to give you $20 right now, but if you wait 15 minutes, I'll give you 40, I would say, give me the 20 and get out of here. I've got to deal with this fire. So, you know, that's what cognitive overload can feel like. And there are lots of accessible ways to offload some of that. We use, you know, Google, like electronic calendars and things like that is one way that we do it. So we don't have to keep remembering all of those things ourselves. We share with friends. We tell each other stories and, you know, help each other problem solve. All of these are tactics for releasing some of that burden.
I have a very personal example. When I first became a radio host, hosting an afternoon talk show, doing the interviews and doing all the prep. And if I went and met my wife and kids at a restaurant after, the menu was too much. Mm. I could not do that level of research at that point. Gradually got better. I got used to it. I think the stress came out of it. Can we just kind of, if things become routine, I guess, if we dial down the stress and anxiety, is that one way to help overcome that cognitive overload?
Yeah, absolutely. I think those two things interact. I think a cognitive, you know, overload creates stress and anxiety. And if you're extremely stressed or anxious, you have more trouble, you know, making decisions because it's taking up so much of your resource or what resources you have available just to deal with feeling all of that stress or anxiety. So absolutely.
Another thing you spend some time on that I love is the power of storytelling and involved with that empathy for other people. Can you tell us how we can use that and what it can do for us?
It was one of my favorite things to discover in the research for this book. And it's a way to connect with minds that are, you know, apart from us in miles or even by centuries and learn what was in those brains and to share that with them. And when you read a story, not only do you have to kind of understand and try to predict and problem solve what's going on with the characters in the story, but you're also in the mind of the person who's telling that story. And you're trying to do some mind reading with that as well. And all of this is just excellent practice for the key skills of being a human being.
So a nice thing about so many of the things you've talked about today is there are things we can kind of integrate into our daily lives. Having gone through all this research, are there some of these things you've taken up and you find yourselves doing them on a daily basis?
I do. And it's the mindfulness thing, especially. This is not something that I'm naturally attracted to doing. And I and I didn't come to this with like, woo, I'm just going to be mindful now. But I was writing this book largely during the entirety of this pandemic, and I found so much utility in just doing that thing where you pause, you stop the anxiety spiral, you stop the rumination spiral, you look around you, you just take note of what's there right now in this moment. You're doing all right. and just, you know, just go from, take it from that baseline.
I feel like so many of the things you're talking about, if I were a Silicon Valley company, I'd have a hard time bundling up. Yeah, just think more about what you're doing and talk to other people more. Maybe eat some fruits and veggies. I don't know. It seems like, I guess I understand why there's a bias toward we've got a pill.
I guess so, but I think they're kind of, you can tell they're sort of onto something because of this whole trend toward the health apps. You know, the three things I found were like being with other people, some kind of mindfulness practice and physical activity. And I, you know, if you're paying attention to what they're doing with apps, they're like, here's your physical activity app. Hmm. If you have an Apple Watch, it's like telling you to breathe all the time. It's time to do your breathing practice. And so, you know, they see this at least that it's, there's some openings here.
As you, as we wrap up, you write your, one of your goals here is to help people in some ways find a peace as they deal with their brains and try to make them better. What would that look like?
Well, I think that the first step is to interrogate why you think you have something that you need to change or improve, and whether that's something that's coming from inside of you or is being imposed on you. So I think that's one question to ask. And then the other question is to think, well, what would be the best thing to improve? Do I need to be, you know, 3 quote unquote IQ points smarter? Or would it be better if I'm on Twitter and somebody says something kind of that makes me mad? Do I come out with a gut punch at them right out of the gate? Or do I just let it go by and practice a little kind of non-judgmentalism and, you know, save myself that effort and then maybe some pain.
Emily, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Emily Willingham is a science writer, and we talked to her today about her new book. It's called The Tailored Brain, From Ketamine to Keto to Companionship, A User's Guide to Feeling Better and Thinking Smarter.